Hello, welcome to season two, episode one of the 7 Minutes podcast. I am Zach, and to my left and right are a couple of other people.
I am Angela.
I am Robert.
Bingo. Back in 2022, here we are. Our first topic for the year is going to be rhythm games, but before we get into that, we are sticking to our tried and true 2021 format. And are going to kick things off with what we've been playing since last recording.
All right. Well, finally have something other than, you know, Animal Crossing. Even though I have still been playing Animal Crossing. No, I got a number of games for Christmas. Because when we're recording this, Christmas has passed. And, started off the year with some new games. Mainly for me, it's been WarioWare for the Switch. And it's actually been really fun.
What's the subtitle of this one? I mean, I know the gimmick, but...
Get it together.
Get it together.
Mm-hmm. Which you need to do quite often.
Excuse me? I think you're the one who needs to follow the advice of Wario and company.
Yeah, it's funny that I'm the one telling you that when Robert and I just spent like 2 solid minutes laughing hysterically before we started filming about some ridiculous joke. Anyway, so WarioWare has been great. It's really fun. I actually feel like compared to other WarioWare games that I've played, I feel like this one actually is a little bit difficult at times. I think it's because of the mechanic of having the different characters with the different abilities. And so that's a little bit challenging because instead of just, you know, hitting a button or whatever, you actually have to control a character and that character has special abilities, and so with each character you're interacting with the same minigame in a different way.
Yeah, I feel like from what little I played compared to how much you've played, it definitely seemed like some characters were harder to control than others, and then I found Mona in particular tricky from the ones I tried. Like one of the, what was the name, like Cricket or Mantis or something, just like jumps, right? Like that's pretty simple.
Yeah, I think it's Mantis, the guy with the black hair and the blue shirt. Yeah,
and then like the dog, I don't remember if that's Dribble or Spitz, just like flies and shoots in one direction. Like it's pretty intuitive controls. But Mona, the function of the analog stick changes depending on whether she's throwing her boomerang or not. That's a little tricky in comparison.
Yeah, but it's actually been really fun. The funny thing about WarioWare is just the absurdity of it. The games, the characters, the world. And even though, I mean, frankly, nobody plays WarioWare for the story mode. The story mode story has been, it was funny. So yeah, that's what I have actually been putting a fair amount of time into lately between Animal Crossing and Animal Crossing.
Right. Robert, have you played any of WarioWare?
Oh, yes. I also played Get It Together. I beat the campaign, quote unquote, the single player. I thought it was really well done. I think that the having the same mini games for everyone, but... You know, just the mechanics are different depending on the character. I think overall I did like it, but was a little torn on it, thinking I might prefer like the traditional way of doing the WarioWare games, but...
I definitely prefer the traditional way.
But it was still really fun, and I thought the graphics were really good, you know, for what they are as a Wario game. So I finally have a PS5. I've been enjoying it a lot. It's freaking huge. Like, that thing makes an original model PS3 look tiny. I think it has a bigger footprint than an original Xbox. I still haven't actually compared them, because I have an original Xbox, but the thing's giant. I had to get rid of a couple consoles that I usually have out to make space for it, but...
Not get rid, because that's...
No, yeah, no. Just
not in your repertoire.
Yeah, not at all.
But, moved them.
They'll be burying me with all my consoles.
Like a pharaoh.
Yeah, it was super cool. And then I bought the media remote, which is actually a Sony media remote. And my TV is an older flat screen, but it's still Sony. And so I noticed when I was setting up the controller to work with the console, I had hit the TV button and it turned the television off. And I was like, this thing already knows it's a Sony TV. I didn't even have to program anything. It was really cool. But graphically, you know, just it's a major step up from, you know, the previous gen. Like, I don't think, well, I say that, but it's like a lot of software is running. You can either play it on a PS4 or PS5. I think even the New Horizon game is on both, but you definitely can see the difference. And it's very fast to load and all that. This is like a year late evaluation of the PS5. Most people already who want one probably have one.
Are you on a 1080p TV?
It's not quite. I think it's technically 720.
All right.
Yeah. Got to upgrade my TV at some point, but it, you know, it still looks really good.
Sure.
And I've been playing Call of Duty Vanguard, so that's the first time in years that I've played a Call of Duty game. It came as a bundle item, and I had considered just, like, getting rid of it. But then I was like, it's been so long since I played Call of Duty. I'm like, just give it a shot. I'm glad I did. The campaign's really fun so far, and the multiplayer is also really good. Call of Duty was the first game I played, like, online with people and learned I was competitive, at least when it comes to video games. And getting sucked back into playing online for hours against people has been really fun. I just wish my internet was better.
And you said this is the first Call of Duty you played in a few years.
Yeah. I think the last Call of Duty I played and was, like, actually into and playing online was Black Ops 2.
Mm-hmm.
I think I did a little bit of Ghosts, but I did not like Ghosts very much, and that's about when I tapered off. So Black Ops 2 was the last time I was, like, really into playing Call of Duty.
And you didn't play any of Cold War, which is the 2020 game.
No, I've not played Cold War yet.
Angela, you did play at least a good chunk of Cold War, mm-hmm. But you haven't tried out Vanguard yet, is that right?
No, I asked for it for Christmas or my birthday.
Oh, sucks.
It's okay, it'll be like, you know.
$20. Yeah, that's pretty soon.
$15, $20 in a couple of weeks.
One of those games at GameStop that's in like a kicked around box.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, so I think that's been about it for what I've been playing lately. Oh, well, actually, I take that back. Two other things. Well, technically three. So Dirt 5 was on PlayStation Plus, and so I'm kind of broke, so it was great having the PlayStation Plus games to just download. So Dirt 5 was really impressive, but I downloaded Forza Horizon 5 and Halo Infinite through the Xbox. And those have been really impressive. Although Forza Horizon 5 looks great, but I could not stand the cinema sequences. Just these, like, really annoying characters that I don't care about and, like, these little conversations that they're having. So, like, this version of Mexico that they've created is really neat. You know, it's incredibly expansive. And then I was incredibly pleased because you get to pick the new Bronco as, like, your immediate first vehicle, and I desperately want one in real life. So I was like, oh, I even get to have a Bronco. But then these annoying characters, I'm just like, why can't I not skip these story sequences? And then the game lies to you. You can go into the options and lower the volume down on their voices, like, completely,
mm-hmm.
and you can still hear them. It refuses to let you, like, completely silence them. I'm like, oh, this is a bunch of crap. Nauseating. But the game itself, you know, is very solid, like the Horizon games are. And Halo Infinite's been really cool. Like, that campaign is pretty solid so far. I'm still in the early going bit of it yet. Like, I'm not actually on the ring proper where it's, like, open world, but just the kind of cinematic stuff that's been happening in the opening has been really engaging. So that's what I've been doing lately.
Cool. It feels like classic Halo in terms of, like, weapon selections and...
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Like, I think, like, the first weapons you get are all just the classic ones, like the Needler or whatever, mm-hmm. and all that. Yeah, it's been super cool. Oh, and then the grapple ability is fun. It's funny because, like, lots of people, it just depends on what games they play. Like, people have compared it to Apex. There's a couple others. My comparison to the grapple was Samus's grapple beam in Metroid Prime 3. But, like, I think I'm alone with that one. Everyone was like, it's Apex and whatever. I'm like, no, it's a Samus. But, yeah, it's been a cool addition.
Why not Bionic Commando 360?
Yeah, see, there you go. Oh, my goodness.
A somewhat underappreciated game.
Those games are really good. Rearmed.
Fully armed? Oh, rearmed.
Yeah.
Oh, I was talking about the 3D one with like Mike Patton from Faith No More.
Oh, God, playing, I forgot about that.
Where he's got
game.
Like dreads, you know?
Yeah, that giant arm.
There's some.
Damn,
some
forgot about that.
Frustrating stuff in the level design, but like the feeling of like the arm feels like properly heavy. So you can, when you like grapple a guy and like throw him up and you're like keeping him aloft like a kite by shooting him and then slamming him down, the whole, like all that stuff really did feel great. Shame. The developer closed as a result of the performance of that game. I think they were called Grin. As for me, I have played a few things that are not Final Fantasy XIV. I won't dwell on Final Fantasy XIV. But I have been playing some smaller games. I picked up, I think the proper title is Ruined King, a League of Legends story, which is by Airship Syndicate. It's the developer that also made two other games that I enjoyed, Battle Chasers Night War, which is like a JRPG, and Darksiders Genesis, which is the first Darksiders game I'd played. That's like an isometric shooter. And both of those I enjoyed a lot, despite both games being based on a property that I had no previous affection for. I was never interested in Darksiders. I didn't even know what Battle Chasers was. I came out of Battle Chasers still not really caring about Battle Chasers, the IP. But the game was so well made, like the progression systems and combat systems were well designed enough that I was on board for playing a League of Legends affiliated game, which is not something I ever thought I'd have any interest in doing. I'm still pretty early in Ruined King. It hasn't grabbed me as much as Battle Chasers did. It just feels like I said, it's a JRPG. In Battle Chasers, you pretty quickly got into the action. Like they gave you multiple characters and put you in a dungeon fairly quickly. And the League of Legends game, Ruined King, is really taking its time with more like slow-paced narrative stuff building up. And there's like combat and stuff sprinkled in, but I still really feel like I'm on a leash in a way that I wasn't early on in Battle Chasers. So I'm hoping that I'll get to a point where I do feel more warmly about it once I get off leash. But so far, it seems like it could be good, but I just haven't been compelled to play it. I also, inspired by Robert talking up Game Pass, which is not something I expected to hear from Robert. He's historically been a buy your games guy.
So a little background, because I am a buy your games guy. I got 3 months of Xbox Live, which, you know, I haven't had that in a long time. So I just got 3 months. But if you do the 3 month and then you have auto renewal set up on your Xbox, it gives you a fourth month for free. But then I was looking at my rewards from GameStop, the power-up rewards, and I had a 3 month for free Game Pass. I was like, well, it's free and I'm broke, so this will let me get some, you know, new games to kind of like try out for a while. Because Zach's rationale has been you can at least use Game Pass to see if you like certain games, and then you can just buy them. And I'm like, yeah, there's nothing wrong with that. Mm-hmm. Like, if I play Halo, like, because that's how I'm playing Halo Infinite. Mm-hmm. I'm like, nothing's stopping me from going to get the disc later. It's just, for now, I'll do it on here. So When I added the 3 months of Game Pass, I thought what it would do was just take my 3 months that I'd already paid for Live and bolt it on, and they'd be combined like that. Instead, it added 3 months to what I already have, and now I have Game Pass plus Live all the way until, like, September. So I was like, oh, this is cool. Anyway, continue.
Yeah. Yeah, so for me, I dip into Game Pass every now and then, like something like every 6 to 8 months. I'll subscribe to Game Pass for a month, try out stuff that's been added in the interim that I hadn't tried yet, and then move on from there. Sometimes I do buy stuff. It's rare, but I think I did buy Remnant. I liked Remnant from the Ashes enough to pick that up. And I got close with Darksiders 3. I think I might end up buying that on PC instead of Xbox. So on Game Pass recently, I played like a indie retro kind of Wonder Boy-ish action platformer called Flynn, Son of Crimson. It doesn't look like Wonder Boy. It doesn't have like the aesthetic of Wonder Boy. And the gameplay doesn't feel like Wonder Boy, but it does kind of have that very lightly Metroidvania thing where it's mostly like stage-based, but the stages branch and you can go back over your steps and explore things. So in that sense, it's really not a Metroidvania. I looked into it. Apparently when this came out on Kickstarter, it was supposed to be more of a Metroidvania, and they kind of pared back the design as they went. It is not an exceptional game. It really feels very familiar to me as someone who has been playing 2D games for a long time. Doesn't really break new ground. The story's not super interesting, but it's all pleasant. Like, it's a pleasant, mellow, comfort food sort of experience. And the art actually really is pretty phenomenal. And I think it's an easy recommendation because it's a mellow comfort food kind of thing, but not a super strong recommendation. I definitely don't think it's like a vital experience, but I do think it's pretty good. And if you like opulent sprite work in retro action platformers, Flynn, Son of Crimson is probably worth a look. The other game I've been playing on Game Pass is somehow an even worse title than either Flynn, Son of Crimson or Ruined King, a League of Legends story. It's called The Record of Laudas War, Deedlit in Wonder Labyrinth. It's a bit of a mouthful, but it's based on like a maybe late 80s, but I think 90s manga and anime with like real classic D&D fantasy influences. But it is a full-throated Metroidvania, and specifically like in terms of presentation and stage layouts and stuff, it feels more like Symphony of the Night than any other Metroidvania I've played or seen. Like, even more than the other Symphony-style Castlevanias or Bloodlines. It just really is taking a lot of aesthetic notes from Symphony of the Night.
Yeah, I don't know if they really count as sprites still, because they're more advanced than sprites, but the, for lack of a better term, the sprite work is really impressive.
Yeah.
I've been sitting watching Zach play it, and it's actually a really beautiful-looking game, and I'm surprised by how... It's interesting. The sprites are, they're simultaneously detailed and not, but they're detailed enough that you can, I almost can't tell if like my eyes are filling in things like, or if they really are maybe a little more detailed than I was thinking, but just the really smooth animations and like more, more advanced animations, and detail to the sprites than I was expecting. Just very impressive.
Yeah, you're right. You're right that the sprite animations are pretty smooth. And I think you like are also saying something that feels true to me, which is, you know, if you look at like an old NES or Super NES game, the sprite work is done in such a way to suggest details that aren't actually there. And it's not quite that technique, but there is something kind of almost impressionistic about the sprite work in this game.
Yep.
That suggests more details than are there.
Yeah. It was a couple in particular. It was actually right at the start of the game. The protagonist, she's sitting on the ground, I think, because she'd like woken up on the ground. But it's the position that she's sitting in. She's sitting up and then she's got like, you know, like one knee up. But it was just a really, I mean, I don't know why I was so impressed by this. It just, like I said, it just looked really detailed, and like I could just see this position that she was sitting in. But then I was also like, is there really that much detail to the sprite, or are my eyes kind of filling in the things I'm supposed to be seeing? And then she encounters this robed, like dark elf looking woman, and I was really impressed by like the level of detail you could see in her hair, and then you could see that she was wearing a robe, you could see she's wearing jewelry, but also like the sprite work is really pretty simple. Just really interesting. I just thought that I was like admiring it artistically.
Angela keeps saying sprite work. Is it sprite work? Is it pixels or is it polygon?
I think it actually is sprite work. It might be one of those things where I don't know what the production was like what their process was, but it doesn't look like straight polygonal graphics to me.
Have you played Bloodstained?
No.
I wonder if you would like Bloodstained. I liked the bit that I played, but that was one of those games where I started playing and then got distracted and haven't gone back to it since. It is ironic that you mention polygons and sprite work, because my students are going to be starting on sprite, making their own sprites starting this coming week.
Oh, cool.
They're going to be working on their 2D game design, so I'm looking forward to doing that.
The one other thing I do want to say about Record of Laudas War, Deedlit in Wonder Labyrinth is that It's by the same developer that made Touhou Luna Nights, which is another Metroidvania that I only ended up playing because it was on Game Pass. And I thought that was like a little uneven, but it had some really good boss fights. Both those games have controls that are kind of like clunky and unintuitive. I don't mean that as a criticism necessarily. I don't know. Like Robert, you did play Ninja Warriors once again. And you know, like Kunoichi is a lot more intuitive to control than Ninja or Yaksha or some other games. Like, it's just like, in some ways, a weirder control scheme for some of those characters. And this, like, Deedlit feels like it does have a weirder control scheme. The same button, like the left trigger, no, left bumper, is used for both a backdash, but also if you press it while you're jumping, but only while you're holding the wind sprite, it freezes you in place in the air, and then you can use that to line up certain shots. Some of the controls do feel like a little hard to get used to in a way that I'm definitely like forgetting what I'm doing while doing the boss fights. But to be honest, I kind of like that in comparison to Flint Sun of Crimson, where I started that up, I looked at the options menu, I was like, okay, button for jump, button for attack, got it, right? And I was just like, knew exactly how to play before even picking it up.
Well, it's interesting because like, if you go back to play, like, especially Xbox 360 and PS3 games, those early years of those consoles, the controls for like first-person shooters, they were still like cementing the layout. And ultimately, what I've come to find is that pretty much every layout for the shooters that you play nowadays kind of follow the typical sort of Call of Duty setup.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's variation, of course, but like the use of the triggers, especially, it's like you press one trigger, you're looking down sights, and then the other one you're shooting. And I'm not saying that they're not intuitive. I mean, there's a reason I think people mimic it. But if you play, like, for example, the, I think it's Perfect Dark Zero on Xbox 360, that totally has its own kind of oddball setup, even though it's the same controller that would, you know, end up playing all these Call of Duty games. And it's kind of fun playing something that feels different, even if it's not necessarily as, I don't know, intuitive as some of the others can be. Like, the Call of Duty setup works, so why break it? Actually, I remember, I think I might have said this in an older podcast, but when I went to go see the development of Skylanders Supercharged, and I was like, I was in the facilities, they were giving us a tour, they had described how they would have kids in the neighborhood come and actually play test the game, because it's, you know, it's for kids. And they said that they'd come up with a control scheme for the cars where, like, you didn't even have to press any of the triggers. I think it was almost just like the control stick and one other button, and that was it. And they said the kids, they thought they would like it because it was simpler. And the children were like, no, how come it's not like Forza? You know, with the more complicated control scheme.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, you know, sometimes just going with the standard works, but other times you play games and it's like Metroid Prime. If you go back and play Metroid Prime 1 and 2 on a GameCube, those have their own setup that's nothing like Call of Duty, but totally works for those games. So, you know, there's some validity to experimenting still, I think.
Prime, the Prime games got re-released on, was it Wii U or Wii?
Wii.
Okay. Do they have like a classic controller?
Or oh, Pro of course not. They're evil.
Setup. Oh, you have to use the Wiimote and Nunchuck. I was wondering, like, when they got re-released, how Nintendo or Retro grappled with the increasingly common paradigm of the Call of Duty.
Yeah, for that particular re-release, they bolted the motion controls from Metroid Prime 3 onto the first two games.
Right.
And did not do the reverse. In fact, that's one of the things that, because they've been endlessly talking, you know, in the media about, oh, are they're going to bring the Metroid Prime trilogy to the Switch. And one of the developers from Retro, I think, said, I can't imagine this would be totally true, because if, you know, if you're trying to make it work so that you could play it handheld, you'd have to have the traditional controls, especially if it's on like a Switch Lite. And he said Metroid Prime 3 would be an absolute beast to go through and redo all of the controls to be, you know, traditional button and stick instead of motion.
That's true, because in like Metroid Prime, when you give it motion controls, or like Resident Evil 4 when you give it motion controls, I haven't played Metroid Prime. You know how I feel about Metroid games. they're fine until you have to make a bomb jump. That's my feeling on Metroid games. Yeah. Regardless, like for Resident Evil 4, which I have played multiple versions, aiming is easier on the Wii, right? Just being able to use the infrared targeting reticle.
Yeah.
And that means like if you design a game for Wii specifically, you can ask for more finicky exact placements of the cursor than you would on a gamepad.
Yes and no. I mean, even though there is like, you know, like kind of a stronger sense of precision, like it's still a little, it's a little imperfect. So I guess that's my response. Yes and no. Like, you can, but like in other ways, it's difficult.
All right. Fair enough. The one other game that I have been playing that I wanted to mention is, you're going to love this, a ROM hack of the original Final Fantasy on the NES called Final Fantasy Restored and Rebalanced, by a very persistent GameFAQs poster who goes by the alias of Astral Esper. She had previously made a hack called Final Fantasy Restored, which had tried to be like a canonical bug fix version of what had been a very good but very buggy NES game. And then in all the time she'd spent working on that, had gotten more opinionated about like how she would change the game for like more than just bug fix reasons. So doing things like in the original Final Fantasy, the fighter is extremely overpowered. Like, you're kind of a chump if you don't take a... The question isn't whether you should bring a fighter in your party. It's how many fighters you should bring in your party. Answers ranging from 1 to 3, usually. By contrast, the thief or the black mage kind of are not very good. So the rebalance plays with some mechanics and some equipment options and spell effects and so forth so that other party members are viable. So I'm actually playing Final Fantasy Restored in my and Rebalanced on the PSP. Sorry, on the Vita. I am running an emulator on the Vita, without a fighter or a red mage in the party. And those are like the two cornerstones of traditional Final Fantasy NES runs because of their power and versatility. I'm not quite done yet. I've just beat the fourth fiend out of four, but there's still the end game stuff to do. So far, though, I would say it's very good. It really does. It feels like Final Fantasy in that it has more of like a dungeon crawling spirit. And it still has the rhythms of the original Final Fantasy. But it feels new also because of the rebalancing and because it has coaxed me into using class combinations that I've never used before. So it's been really good. That's it as far as what I've been playing. Robert, before we jump into the topic, I think you also wanted to dip into current events.
Ah, yes, yes. So in this great nation, there has been a sale of... Activision Blizzard to Xbox/Microsoft. I guess just briefly, I just wanted to touch on, you know, I laughed because I think a certain news outlet had written an article like within the hour saying, you know, this is going to be it for Call of Duty on PlayStation. And then I think the very next day, Phil Spencer was like, yeah, it ain't going anywhere. It's like, oh, so much for that article. But
I wouldn't be surprised if it disappears off PlayStation like in like 3 to 4 years or something like that.
I don't know. You know, I mean, I'll never say no to that because we don't really know. But I think Microsoft's already kind of laid the blueprint for what they're going to do with Minecraft. You know, Minecraft was on everything, mm-hmm. just like Call of Duty's on everything. And I think when Microsoft bought it up, they just knew... we would lose money if we took it off of everything and put it on just our platforms.
That's what I was thinking. I just think it would be, I mean, the amount of money they would lose on Call of Duty, like
you'd
taking
be
it
losing
off.
Losing so many people.
Millions of players, millions of dollars.
There's a lot of sense to that. At the same time, they could start doing, if not releasing on PlayStation, and then other like nudges towards the Xbox ecosystem, exclusive DLC it free with Game Pass.
I think they're going to optimize it for Xbox. Mm-hmm. And like one of the things that had happened the last couple console generations was there was kind of a tug of war between like, well, who's going to get certain things first mm-hmm. for like the DLC. And I think the last gen, it went from being Xbox to PlayStation. And I think it's still that way now.
For Call of Duty specifically, you mean?
Yeah. I can't remember, though. But I do think that ultimately that's what you'll see, is it's like it'll be optimized for Xbox. But there's everything else. I mean, you know, Activision Blizzard has all of its games. So it's going to be interesting. I do think that Microsoft might cherry pick certain franchises to try to just put on Xbox, like the stuff it can really get away with. Call of Duty, I think is like Minecraft. I don't think you can get away with taking away from everything else. Mm-hmm. But it also, it doesn't seem like it would behoove them to do that completely anyway, because I think Xbox is like, they're trying to foresee the future, and they really want to go for the, there is no box that you specifically need, streaming, online, all that crap.
Yeah, but ironically, like if PlayStation is too dominant, that strategy doesn't work. So they might need to find some ways to peel people off of PlayStation.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see. I mean, it's... I'm not necessarily... I think people understand how big of a deal it is, but, you know, I think it's kind of easy to forget just how many franchises are encompassed by Activision Blizzard. I mean, all the classic Blizzard stuff, plus, you know, Crash Bandicoot, Spyro, Call of Duty, Guitar Hero, Skylanders, and, I mean, Phil Spencer even mentioned that some of these dormant franchises, they're interested in looking at again. So who knows? Like maybe you see Skylanders come back and
I don't believe it. Like he name dropped like Hexen. I don't think there's going to be a Hexen revival.
Yeah, probably no Hexen. But they might look at something like, you know, like Skylanders and just say, well, what if we bring this back, but we make it so that it's exclusive to Xbox? I mean, who knows? But I think my more immediate concern is when they talked about the deal. I haven't really seen anyone mention this, but I don't exhaustively comb the internet, but no one's really talked about all these studios that are part of that deal. Like, that's a lot of studios under the banner of both of those companies. And all I can think is they're going to lay people off. Like, there's going to be, like, studios that probably close or consolidated, personnel that's potentially jettisoned, because that's just kind of what happens with all these deals. And I think part of what Microsoft might do is use some of the controversy that's been going on with Activision Blizzard as like kind of a, well, we're cleaning house, but, you know, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, we're also cutting operating costs by getting rid of some of these people. And I think I've mentioned this on the podcast before. I mentioned this to my students when I was talking to them earlier this week, that it just kind of sucks, because while what I'm saying is not in stone, it obviously hasn't happened yet, but I just keep thinking of the summer of 2019 and a lot of the industry coming out and saying, oh, you know, we need to diversify our workforce and hire, you know, a broader spectrum of people, which is cool. But if you read Jason Schreier's Press Reset book, where it's just talking endlessly about all these studios where you would do your job, you would do it well. They'd crunch you, you know, just, you know, wringing every ounce of blood out of you to get a project done. It's a success. And then the people in charge of counting the money say, OK, but for the stockholders, we need to fire a bunch of you, even though we just made record profits. And I'm just thinking how it sucks, because they're encouraging people to get these jobs, and particularly, you know, young people of color. And I just think of some of my students. I have a pretty diverse crowd of kids, and I'm thinking they're going to have those kids go through college. You have to go get a degree. Like if you want to be in game design, you got to know what you're doing. And so a lot of these kids will invest in themselves to get those jobs, and then they turn around, work, and are told, okay, now you're fired. So it's like, so you, as an industry, you talk about let's diversify, but the people that you're bringing in are exactly the people that you fire. And that's just kind of screwed. And so I'm hoping that this deal doesn't end with the worst case scenario that I'm discussing.
Ideally, even the people who do get fired, assuming it's not an oversaturated field, will have more of a resume that they can take to their next
job. But see, my problem with that is it's like...
I'm not saying that's how it should be.
I mean, just because it's a point that I want to address. You know, let's say you wet your feet at... I was working for, you know, Activision, you know, I was working for Treyarch or whatever, like these major studios. Mm-hmm. You have a resume builder, but that's where you want to be. I mean, ultimately, like if you're ambitious, I guess, and you're like, I want to be in the industry proper working on these big AAA games. These AAA studios are a lot of the times that's where you're seeing the layoffs. So it's like, so I'm building my resume to go work. Where? At Curve Digital?
Or no, at another AAA studio. Like, the way these things have worked, and again, this isn't me excusing it, but like, yes, Activision fires a lot of people after a game comes out. But earlier in the process, they have to hire and ramp up. So, like, the people that are no longer working at Activision might get scooped up by EA or some other company that is ramping up on a different project. So it may still be AAA. Like I said, obviously... I wouldn't want to do that, like as for my job to be like every 2 years,
yeah,
you get dumped out on your ass and you have to find somebody else to take you in.
That state of flux is what is in that Press Reset book a lot. Just the pressure that these developers feel where it's like, you don't feel any consistency. So like if you, you know, you buy a house and you're like, okay, I'm living here in this city, and then you get fired, it's like, well, I might have to move wherever. And it's just that that's the part that really stinks. Also, I'm not talking crap about Curve Digital. I love Curve Digital. They make a lot of great games. But I'm just saying Curve Digital compared to like Activision, you know, anyway.
Angela, do you know what Curve Digital is?
I've heard of it. I don't know.
I don't know what Curve Digital is.
You never heard of Curve Digital? They do a lot of some of it's like indie stuff, just smaller games. But they've become really prolific. And recently they've been talking about them in the media. How
do they make that damn Tori game?
Did they do Tori? No. That was totally just an indie developer. But I think Curve was part of the group that put together. I'm not going to remember the name of it. It's that polygonal, that low poly racing game that came out on Switch last year. There's a couple of them now, actually. I'll think of it later.
Sounds like a cheapo cash grab.
Anyway, Curve is great. But yeah, I guess that's my thoughts on the Activision sale. So yeah.
Cool. I don't think I have much else to add on that particular topic. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Cool. All right. So let's go ahead and jump into our topic of the day, which is rhythm games, aka music games. It's kind of a big category. We're taking on an entire genre, but a lot of these games tend to be small and kind of a grab bag. So I thought it might be fun to talk about. The usual question we address when starting is like, how did we first run into rhythm games, or what's our first exposure to them?
I'm trying to remember the exact timeline, but I think my first exposure to a rhythm game was Elite Beat Agents.
Okay. For this, for the DS.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I have no idea why I asked for that game. I know I asked for it. The only thing I possibly think of is that I saw it in Nintendo Power and for some reason wanted it. Yeah, I'm not talking crap about it. I really don't know why I wanted that game. It's unusual. The characters are unusual. I can't think of why me at that time would have been like, yes, somebody please get this for me for my birthday or Christmas. But I did. Asked for it and someone got it for me and it was really fun.
Men in suits.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And again,
right up your alley.
Be that as it may. thinking back on it, it has that very strange quirkiness of WarioWare, like the bizarre, the outlandish, the absurdity. It's got it all. And so,
yeah, there's an element to music games, especially the music games that have narrative attached, like Parappa the Rapper or Space Channel 5 or Elite Beat Agents. That is absurd. It's kind of got like a movie musical or music video kind of vibe to it.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the good ones lean into it like that.
Yeah. The only thing that when I was saying I'm trying to remember the timeline, I'm trying to remember the earliest WarioWare game I played.
Well, it would have been the one on the GameCube.
Yeah, because we didn't have... Yeah, I guess it was the one on the GameCube. And that had to have come out before Elite Beat Agents.
That's not a rhythm game, though, is it? There might have been like a rhythm minigame.
There's a reason I'm bringing up WarioWare.
Okay.
Is because I'm making an argument. I'm making an argument that, in a way, I think the WarioWare games are kind of a rhythm game.
There's a little bit of a rhythm influence in the way that it bounces between the minigames.
Yes.
Or the microgames, I should say.
So it
like
plays,
the tempo increase?
It plays, there's a tempo, and the tempo increases, and... It's the tempo doesn't exactly extend into the mini games,
mm-hmm.
but there's something about it that feels like a rhythm game overall.
Hmm. Well, because like it's all regimented, mm-hmm. like it's every bit of it is there's the timer, but what you're doing between like the do 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 do, and then boom, you go in. That's where it's disrupted because mm-hmm. it could be anything.
Mm-hmm.
And then, but those are always the same amount of time, I believe.
Yeah.
And so then it goes right back into the music and then the gameplay.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a little bit of rhythm there.
What's interesting about that is like the WarioWare devs went right on to actually make kind of a rhythm game.
Yeah, they're rhythm heaven, aren't they?
They're the rhythm heaven people.
Mm, okay. But yeah.
Although I think you're forgetting, it goes back further than you're thinking. Our first exposure to rhythm games would have been DDR.
I was going
to
say, if you want to make the argument for DDR,
Like when I think of these games, my brain just goes to Guitar Hero, but it's dismissing all the stuff that kind of came before. Like there was
Taiko, Drum Master. Yep. Mm-hmm. I remember playing that, or if it wasn't exactly that, it was a like Taiko game in the arcade.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And like, I liked DDR. I was always too self-conscious to like actually really try and play it. Like I remember playing on like a really soft, easy mode in the arcade and doing like a couple songs and then slinking off.
I haven't played a lot of DDR in an arcade. I don't think I ever spent enough time with DDR to really get sufficiently used to it to feel fluent with the controls.
Mm-hmm.
At least, you know, once it starts speeding up, I'm like, wait, which way, where, mm-hmm. Where do I put my feet? And, yeah, it's like, I think the self-consciousness and the fact that I almost only played it in arcades meant that I never really got that used to it. I actually ended up, I owned a couple of DDR games, I think,
mm-hmm.
and like roll up mats for it.
Mm-hmm. There was the Mario Mix one.
I wish we had that.
That had a mat.
I assure you that what I had was not the Mario Mix DDR. I don't remember what I had. It was a couple different games. And we didn't play it much because... one of the first times we played it, a downstairs neighbor came up to complain about the stomping.
That's not a game you want to play in an apartment.
No. So what actually happened is like we were on the fifth floor. Somebody knocked on our door to complain. And they were from the third floor. They'd gone up to the fourth floor. And then the people on the fourth floor had been like, it's not us.
Dang.
The joys of living in an old building.
You're not even fat. Imagine if I was on that.
It wasn't me, honestly. Like, I was aware of like the weight
little
of my
pieces
footsteps.
Pieces of the ceiling falling off.
And I was trying to like soften my landing. It was like a 5'3" string bean of a girl that was just like stomping her heart out.
Yeah, you know, DDR feels like it's better in the arcade because you have that really strong metal bass, and I think they're actually clicky pads or buttons that your foot bounces off of. But mm-hmm. I don't know if I've ever played DDR on one of the mats, only the arcade.
The mat's not as good. You like the nice thing about the actual arcade setup is your feet can feel the borders of the pads, so you can kind of get a better sense of where your lower body is. You can drift on the mat really easily.
You know, music games are interesting because I was talking with another professor and she's teaching 4D at the school. And 4D deals a lot with like kind of like time lapse and video production kind of stuff for art. But there's overlap with my class. My class is actually joined with a 4D section. And so she didn't really know much about like game design. And I was telling her how game design is interesting because like there is overlap with some of the 4D in terms of like narrative and storytelling. But I told her games are interesting because then you can have like a Tetris where there's not a speck of narrative. It's just gameplay, just the puzzle solving. And, you know, a lot of the rhythm games can kind of be like that where it's like you're just playing to the music and like there's not necessarily a story, although sometimes there is.
Yeah, the whole genre is like bifurcated. On the one hand, you have games like Parappa, Space Channel 5, Guitaru Man that are more like they're structured more like a musical. And then on the other side, you have ones that are more like a playable jukebox that you play with your fingers or your hands or whatever, where there is no story and it's really just enjoying the songs and playing them.
You know, music games, you know, they really had a heyday, and I feel like that heyday has certainly passed. And it's kind of sad because they were really creative. You know, Donkey Konga was one. That was another one that I had asked for, and I'm not really sure why. I guess I thought the bongos were cool or whatever, like the bongo peripheral, but... it was just a really creative thing, you know, having the bongos and they had a microphone and, you know, as you increase the difficulty, you would have to introduce claps into the drumming. But there were just a lot of creative things going on with the music games and rhythm games. And I don't know, to me, like I think of those games and I just think back to very specific times of my life and also just like. Moments in the gaming industry. It just makes me think of like a particular setting, a particular time, a particular moment in the world. Like I think even though this isn't a game, but whenever I think of music and rhythm games, I think back to, it was a video that had gone, I guess, like viral at the time. I don't know if going viral was really a thing yet, but it was a video of this guy who was playing DDR, but he was doing it on his computer. And he, like, the reason that the video had, like, exploded was because the dude was getting so angry playing DDR on his keyboard that he was, like, smashing his head into his wall. And, like, at the beginning of the video, you can see that there are holes in the wall.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about this video. Yeah. He loses it, and he's blaming the monitor, I think.
Yes, yeah. He's claiming that there's, like, lag on the monitor. And then I think he...
Were there holes before? Like, implying that this is not the first head-bashing session?
No, and so in the video,
he's probably in his parents' house, which is even more embarrassing.
I remember talking to Robert at the time and actually being angry. I mean, I remember we were just laughing hysterically at this guy, but I also remember being mad, saying, like, he probably lives at home and this is what he's doing to his parents' house. But he takes the monitor and he gets so mad, and I think he grabs it from either side and he's just like, and he, like, slams it a couple times into the wall and then cracks the monitor. And he, there's, like, this moment, you can never see his face throughout the video because he has the camera, because I think he was trying to film, like, a perfect run.
Yeah, there was no streaming at this point. I think this is, like, the mid to late 2000s, yes, so there's no Twitch for him to be doing his...
No, he was going to put this on, like, YouTube or something. And so he has, like, the camera aimed at the keyboard and the monitor. And so when he cracks it, I think he says, like, oh... And there's just, like, this quiet and this pause. And he says something like, yeah, I don't even remember. But he has this, like, nerd voice and just kind of, like, you know, like, well, fuck that up. And he's just, like, he's all, like, breathing hard. He quits out of DDR and he's trying to fix it. And he's, like kind of caressing it at one point. Like, what have I done? What have I done? When I think back to rhythm games and stuff, I just always think of that video.
I'm laughing because I bet you that somebody listening to the podcast is, like, thinking, that was so-and-so from Minnesota. Yeah. And that video was debunked. It was a fraud.
Yeah, it was
wasn't
fake.
Real.
It was,
like,
all
whatever.
Fake. Yeah. And you know what? Even if it was fake, even if it wound up being a totally fake, total production... It had an impression on me. I'll never forget it.
That's how internet videos are. Yeah. Like, you'll see, like, some horrible car crash video, yeah, and then there's someone in the comments, I know that guy. He's from Wisconsin. Yeah. He's okay now. And it's like, yeah, sure. Okay. Yeah.
If you have any information on the whereabouts or well-being of monitor smashing DDR guy, send an email to 7minutespod@gmail.com.
And if it was you... Sorry to laugh at your misfortune, but
these,
I mean,
fuckers are laughing at me.
But you were the one that posted it, I'm assuming.
You know, that period when, because, you know, we mentioned Dance Dance Revolution and other stuff that came before, but with the advent of Guitar Hero, especially around the time that, like, the Wii and the 360 and all that was going on, because I believe the first two Guitar Hero games are on PlayStation 2.
Yep.
But by the time you evolve into, you know, the 360 era, it was cool because, like, the Wii itself was already this incredibly social machine. But, like, the music games completely lent themselves to bringing in groups of people to play. And it was just this perfect whirlwind of, like, the casuals are showing up now. The rhythm games are there. Like, it was this whole period where everyone was playing all this stuff. And it's... It is sad how it tapered off, because, like, it was, especially because the technology now, it seems much more friendly towards it. Mm-hmm. Like, everything's, you had wireless controllers by the time you got to the PS3, but I'm just saying, the way you can just hook everything up with Bluetooth now, it's instantaneous. Mm-hmm. And then the online, so, like, I know that there were the digital storefronts before, but, like, I just imagine if you were to make these games again right now, it's like, just have those digital storefronts going, you know? And it's like, and then you're just for, like, you release one version of Rock Band or one version of Guitar Hero, and then that's all you'd have to do. And then you just would update it like a service, basically. Only thing is, I wouldn't want to be renting that music. You let me buy those songs, but still, it'd be really awesome to see it make a comeback.
Harmonix has tried to, at least sort of tried to position Rock Band 4 as, like, a platform they're going to build on going forward. which is to say they have no intention of releasing a Rock Band 5. And they're still releasing DLC for it even now. Like, they never fully abandoned that the way that Activision abandoned Guitar Hero.
The thing is, it's the instruments. And, like, they make it too prohibitive to get your hands on them. Like, if you go get the set, it's expensive. Mm-hmm. It's almost impossible to find individual instruments. Mm-hmm. It's like, I almost feel like if you're going to make it work, you'd almost have to take a hit on them. And just say, you know what, we're going to anticipate we'll make more money from selling the music perpetually and make the instruments as cheap as we can. Because I think for a lot of people, it's like, I don't want to go spend $200 to get everything, you know. And
especially too, for something like the drums, you know, if I'm playing and one of the four drum pads goes out, it's like I have to try and track down a drum set. And I'm trying to think when they were selling those new, I don't remember if the drums were sold alone or if the drums came with like a guitar or two. But, you know, regardless, you don't want to have to go like potentially having to buy like one or two additional guitars with the drums for no reason. It's just like, I don't need anything else. I just need a replacement drum set.
I doubt it's feasible for Harmonix or whoever to heavily subsidize the cost of the instruments. Because they don't know who's going to buy them or how many things they're going to pick up, right? Mm-hmm. They don't have the kind of deep pockets that Sony does, right?
Yeah, but now with the
that's true.
Microsoft hardware and they have Activision, Guitar Hero will come back in force.
If Microsoft thought that was going to be worthwhile to do, they'd have the pockets for it. It is frustrating for me with Rock Band specifically that I picked up the original Rock Band on Xbox 360 and then Rock Band 2 and 3. I didn't buy an Xbox One when it came out, like most people, right? And by the time I picked up an Xbox One or an Xbox One X, I found out that I couldn't play Rock Band 1, 2, 3 on the Xbox One. And I could buy Rock Band 4 and then like import my tracks, like export the tracks from the older Rock Bands into the new one. But all the instruments I had for the 360 are incompatible with the Xbox One.
That was so stupid. Mm-hmm. It didn't make any damn sense.
I really wish they'd found a way to make them compatible, but they did something. I remember looking into this. They did something to standardize the inputs or like the way that controllers worked on the Xbox One that resulted in older stuff not working.
Why not just create like
an adapter?
That's the word I was thinking of, an adapter.
Yeah, well, when Rock Band 4 came out, such adapters were made and were all scooped up, and you cannot find them anymore for like less than, I don't know, I think when I looked, they were maybe like $500 for an adapter or something like that.
That's what? Annoying.
Just because they're so scarce.
I'm going to look it up right now while you're talking.
And it's definitely multiple hundreds. I could have the exact estimate wrong. Mm-hmm. But part of the problem is when Rock Band 4 came out, Harmonix and whoever else they were working with partnered with
Mad Catz.
Yes. To make the instruments and these adapters. And then Mad Catz went under.
Mm-hmm.
And so the production stopped. And because the game had already been out for a while at that point, it didn't make sense to try and start up production with somebody else. So it just, there hasn't been more, you know, 360 adapters made since then. So everyone who wasn't like an early adopter for Rock Band 4 is kind of out of luck. And even the people who did are like, every time they turn on the game, they're like, please tell me the adapter didn't break. Because if I have to replace it, I'm out several hundred dollars.
So are you talking about, I'm looking... of course, it's an Amazon listing, but it's the first listing that came up. Rock Band 4 Legacy Game Controller Adapter for Xbox One.
Probably, yeah. Probably. There's a couple different ones. It's a separate one for the wired versus wireless, which is also awkward.
It's a Mad Catz one. It is $400.
Yep.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Well, I think supply and demand, man.
I think another thing that would be helpful is like if they do bring the concept back, probably try to make it so that the controllers are just universal, because like you have to have like a PS3 version, a 360 version, the Wii version. It's like, just make the damn things work across all of them. Like, put a switcher in it if you have to. I'm sure there's connectivity or whatever, but like, find something, because that's another thing that sucks, is it's like, if you want to play it, you have these specific you know, instruments that you have to have. And it's like, I could see the game being specific, but like the instrument, come on.
Rock Band is probably, all due respect to metal DDR pads, Rock Band is probably the single most space demanding rhythm game, at least that I can think of. Not that you didn't have to make space for your taiko drums or your Donkey Kongas or whatever.
I was in a GameStop recently, and this guy walked in, and he had like a little fortune in retro crap in his arms. He had the Donkey Konga game in the box in his arms, an Atari Lynx bag with the Atari Lynx in it, and a bunch of games, and like the player's guide for Pokemon Coliseum. And I thought he was trying to trade in the bongos. And so I looked at him and I said, dude, I go, don't sell those here, even if they do take them. I go, they're not going to give you anything. Mm-hmm. I go, you could get good money if you're trying to sell them. Mm-hmm. He's like, oh, no. These are mine. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh. I'm like,
why is he carrying them around? With them. Yeah.
He had gone into where we live. There's a toy store near the GameStop, and the toy store sells retro games. He had just, I take that back. He had gone in the store, but that's not where he got them. And I was like, oh, well, where did you get them then? He goes, I work at like kind of a dump and people just throw stuff away. And this was at the dumps.
Are you serious?
Yeah, that's where he got the Lynx too, he claimed.
What?
Yeah. I had actually never held an Atari Lynx until that night. It was way bigger than I thought it was going to be. I thought the Atari Lynx was small. It was like it's the size like of that, a Game Gear. Isn't it? Yeah, it's big.
I am appalled at the things that people throw away. I don't mean to go on too much of a tangent here. It's just, that's disgusting to me. Why would you throw those away?
It's like, go take it to a second.
Yeah, exactly. Like, go take it to Goodwill, to Salvation Army. Like, they don't care. You know, just take it to Savers.
Well, that's like, not to carry too long on with this, but I can't remember if I mentioned on the show before, but I have a Japanese PlayStation 3 because my friend's neighbors just put it on the sidewalk outside of their house. Mm-hmm. It's like, why would you just put this out? And like, the thing, other than the fact it was missing the cords and the controller, mm-hmm. it was absolutely pristine, like new.
Well,
like I just gave it a wipe down and I was like, this thing's beautiful. And I got the cords, turned it on, just fine.
You know, the neighborhood you got it from is admittedly affluent.
Yeah.
And I've just found over the years, affluent people are just, they're so wasteful.
Yep.
I mean, like when you go to thrift stores and you find a like clearly unworn, brand new, probably just had the tags taken off pair of jeans that was normally like $300, $400. And they didn't care. They didn't care to actually return them and get their money back. They didn't care to sell them and get at least a good chunk of their money back. They're like, I don't need them anymore. I'm just going to donate them to the thrift store.
The more money you have, and especially the more money and the less time you have.
I'm just going to say it to my benefit.
Yeah. The more that kind of stuff makes sense.
I'm reaping all the benefits.
Now I'm reaping all the benefits.
Like if we really had no money and more time, it might make sense to like darn socks to keep them going, you know? Mm-hmm. But like if you're not that poor or you don't have much time, it makes more sense to just go to Uniqlo or Walmart mm-hmm. or whatever and get socks in bulk.
I actually wish, Robert, that you had asked that guy where he worked, because I would get a part-time job there.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too. It's funny, speaking of darning socks, I just recently read Ernest Hemingway's The Old Man and the Sea.
Mm-hmm.
And I forget what year it's in, but it's interesting when you're reading it because the old man is on his boat mm-hmm. and he's chasing this giant fish. And at one point, he's like in this endless war with the fish trying to catch it. And he describes wishing he had a radio on his boat. A radio. Yeah, just ending.
Yeah.
It's just, it's, you know, it's funny, the things we take for granted. But anyway, going back to the fragility of these things, as we were talking about, you know, like the adapter breaking or whatever. I remember with the music games, it was like, there's certain people you didn't want to hand mm-hmm. the guitar over to, where you're just like, man, he's going to fucking ruin it.
They're
like,
all pretty sturdy, at least all the ones I've used.
Yeah, like, but there are people out there mm-hmm. who are just beasts with things.
I was worried about people abusing the foot pedal of the drum kit, because I was pretty much the only one. I think I was the only one who used the drums, because I'm not great with the guitar. I was only able to get up to like medium difficulty in both Guitar Hero and Rock Band. So I gravitated towards the drums. And I was definitely more competent on the drums, but I didn't really want people messing with them. And especially if like they were just too hard on the pedal, and I'd be like, they're going to break it. They're going to break it. And we're not going to have to get a whole new drum set. I was all paranoid.
Yeah, you know, I remember with the guitar, I think Angela got Guitar Hero 3 for the Wii as a birthday or Christmas gift. And so it's just interesting when you start with it. So like Angela's hands are smaller than mine, so I think that's...
That's a problem for
although I think there's a lot of petite women that can play on expert, but anyway. but, you know, I have big, fat, chunky hands, so I had no problem getting them across the thing. But I remember one night I had a fever. This is the world pre-COVID, so don't judge me. But I was sitting playing the game and in this weird fever state, and something in my brain unlocked that night because, like, I had been able to, like, brokenly play on hard and was, like, kind of doing it but not. But then I got sick, and that night I just remember something clicked, and I was like, oh, I've got this. I can do this now. And then I was like, well, let's ratchet it up to expert. So, like, I got to the point where I could do expert okay. When solos would come, so if some of the solos were extra challenging, they'd be broken and terrible. But, like, that sense of satisfaction of, like, learning how to play was really fun.
Yeah, it's something that I think rhythm games do, not uniquely, but they do it well. And you get some of, I can get some of the same vibe playing a rhythm game, like that state of flow that is hard to find in, for me, in video games outside of shmups. Like if you're playing like a shooter, you know, like Xevious or Gradius or whatever, and you're playing it and replaying it and getting good enough that you're really in the zone and you know how to like do a run of that game, you get into a kind of flow state that you only get to if you are practiced enough with something that you really kind of like become one with the machine. And rhythm games, though, are really good at putting you in that kind of state, partly because like music has that effect on people already, and you combine that with that kind of really like time demanding gameplay where you really have to be on it in order to sync up. It's one of the best things about them.
I read an article, I think it was an IGN article a long time ago, where the music craze had already died and enough time had passed that this person was talking about it, like, you know, it was a while ago, saying something about how, you know, you'd go play these games at parties and, you know, sometimes you might even get laid if you were really good with the guitar. And
what? Just thinking,
who is the nerd girl that was just,
look how fast he plays. He hit every note.
I don't even care. I'm going to judge hard. That is sad. that is sad. Like, come on.
Might have been a joke, to be fair.
I hope.
But something poetic license.
Maybe not.
But, you know, it was, those games are fun because, well, for one thing, there's the karaoke aspect. When that game first came out, I wouldn't dare sing into a mic. Like, I wish I could go back in time because I like doing the singing part now. But it is fun when you're watching and, like, someone's really good. I remember we had gone to Reno and the arcades there towards the, I don't know, the middle part of the Guitar Hero lifespan. They actually had arcade machines that had Guitar Hero, and it was this heavy ass version of the guitar, but you could just hold it and play it. And I was doing Smashing Pumpkins. I forget which song it was, but it was one of the Smashing Pumpkins songs. And this guy had come up behind me while I was playing. And I remember the whole time I could feel him behind me. He's watching. And then when I finished, he was just like, wow, that was awesome. Because I was playing on expert.
I actually remember.
It was Cherub Rock.
I was playing whatever. I was on a completely different arcade cabinet. But I could see Robert in the distance. And he had this little crowd of maybe four or five, and he finished a song, and there were, you know, these like enthusiastic little, you know, and everyone's like, yeah, it's really funny.
But it's cool because it to me, it's one of those, I mean, maybe it's by design, but maybe not, but like, it's like an unintended, like, parallel with music, because like, music's performative, you know, and you go to a concert and you watch people and it's impressive, and it's like, you get to kind of experience that by being able to play the game well. And then it's tethered to the music. So.
Because people more obviously make their body into a spectacle when they're playing DDR or Guitar Freaks or Guitar Hero, I think there is a sense in which that's true. Plus, you know, obviously karaoke has a history of being that also in bars or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
for us, Rock Band was, like for me, Rock Band was not my first karaoke game. And that's actually part of why we picked up Rock Band. I had never been interested in Guitar Hero because I didn't really like the kind of like hard rock grunge set list. It didn't appeal to me as much. But we did have like some of Konami's Karaoke Revolution games.
Hmm.
And
no SingStar?
We got SingStar too. I did not think SingStar was as good. SingStar has, I'm trying to think of what the right word is. You have like, you know, your singing cursor going, trying to like match along with like the river of the notes, right? And in Karaoke Revolution or in Rock Band, the stream moves, like the whole sheet moves. But in SingStar, if I'm recalling correctly, it's more like a karaoke machine where it's like one line's worth is displayed and then it goes to the next line. And that's a lot more discombobulating to have to like restart. If you don't have perfect pitch, it's harder to like keep on top of stuff. Mm-hmm. I also did not like the SingStar song selection as much as even Karaoke Revolution, which is still not exactly my thing. Like part of the appeal for me with Rock Band is that I did really like the song selection more than either what was available for Karaoke Revolution or for Guitar Hero.
You know, the rhythm stuff made its way to the handhelds too. There's a portable version of Rock Band. It's actually pretty fun. Yeah, you're not using an instrument, but the way that you're pressing the buttons is very intuitive. So if you just enjoy like the matching of the notes using a controller, that's really fun.
Oh, there was like a weird, like almost accordion looking peripheral for the DS, right?
Yes. So PSP had just pure button controls with Rock Band, and then there was a Lego Rock Band on DS as well. But yeah, I almost forgot about that. There was the Guitar Hero with the little guitar that you could connect to your DS, and then you would strum using the touchscreen.
I guess the answer is no, given earlier things you've said when I asked what was the first rhythm game you played. But there were rhythm games even on like the original Game Boy and the Game Boy Color.
Hmm.
I remember I played like some kind of pop and music game on the Game Boy Color, I think. I don't remember much about it. It was back in my ROM phase. So it was like, it would have been a Japanese only game. And I just remember, the only song I remember was like the theme song to Cutie Honey, which is some old anime.
I have a Cutie Honey figurine in my bookshelf.
Yeah.
I didn't know what Cutie Honey was. I was in elementary school and just found it at a local toy shop. And I was like, oh, she's got a little school uniform on like Sailor Moon. So I just have that figure.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's also the music stuff continued into like the 3DS era, because that's when we got Theater Rhythm for Final Fantasy. Uh-huh. Some of those touch-based like tapping, like, I mean, Elite Beat Agents is an example of it, but Theater Rhythm was really well done, and it was cool because it had all that Final Fantasy music, and then there was a bunch of DLC that you could get as well. Like, what I'm getting at is like the music genre is interesting because it meshes just as well with fake instruments as it does with no instruments. Like,
is that your most played Final Fantasy game?
It actually might be.
I forgot about that failed Wii music game. Yeah, Wii Music.
With the horrible E3 with that jackass who's doing the drums, like going crazy.
Yeah, yeah, man, RIP.
And then Miyamoto pretending that it worked. He's all, oh, what the fuck is this?
Yeah. Poor Wii Music. You know, I just turned 31 in December, and I will be 32 this year. And I've had moments here and there where I'm starting to feel old, but they're usually, like, mental. Like, somebody references something, or somebody doesn't know what something is. It's like, how the fuck do you not know that? You know, and I'm all, like, you know, unreasonably grumpy about it. But I haven't hardly had any moments where I've started to feel old because of something that happened to my body. You know, people will talk about how, like, you know, they get older and they sneeze wrong and they throw out a disc or something. Yeah, I haven't had any of those yet, but I did have my first physical moment of I'm starting to feel old. Maybe 4 weeks ago now, 3 weeks ago, the three of us decided to break out Zach's Rock Band equipment and his Xbox 360. And I was like, well, yeah, of course I'm going to go on the drums. And we had only gotten into a couple songs. And I was like, man, I am really feeling this. This is starting to hurt. And then my forearms started burning like fire through my forearms. And I was like, I'm just going to I'm just going to walk it off, figuratively. So then we had paused, and I think Robert had actually gone to work, and then I think he was going to come back, but there was a pause, and I was really starting to feel it. And then, and then we played some more, and then Robert went home, and me and Zach are getting ready for bed, and I think this was the most severe physical pain I've ever been in. And I've had a surgery, and I have also had my wisdom teeth removed. This was like, I was all in pain, and I was curled up in the fetal position on the couch, and I was telling Zach, please give me some like ibuprofen or something. And like, it hurt so bad and lasted so long, it actually impacted my sleep that night. And like, I didn't get a good sleep. And I just knew it was one of those situations where I'm going to be so exhausted from being in pain that I'm just going to like fall asleep eventually.
I did not push it that far. I did some drums too, right? We were switching off a bit, partly because you were like, oh, I need a break from the drums, right? Like, I need to find something to sing.
You might just be out of shape versus being old.
Well, so there's both of that going on. Like, undoubtedly I am out of shape, but my forearms though, it's like, yeah, how do you get your forearms in shape? Like, part of it is having less stamina than I did, like in my 20s when I could just keep playing and playing. Because I mean, I've never been really in shape. I'm just naturally thin. But like, I didn't work out. I'd never gone to the gym.
I don't know. Because I played and my hands did start to feel tired. But I think if I was playing regularly like I had been, I could probably go like I used to.
Yeah.
Go, like, yeah. But also like,
part of it's also,
the drums are way rougher than the guitar.
I was just about to say, I'm doing something way more physical than the three of you for hours. If I was in still in practice, like Robert said, I would have been able to go longer and not be in pain. Because I would get tired, I'm playing this in my mid-20s, but yeah, it was
The specific muscles that the Rock Band drums, maybe real drums too, who knows, but the way like Rock Band drums like stress your body, like muscles in your forearms, also, and then also the like the calf,
it's
for, and the like tendon around the side of your hip.
For me, and I think this may actually just be like a user error, so to speak, on my part for the leg, because I put my heel down. I'm basically kind of holding my right foot over the pedal and I'm basically kind of keeping it somewhat elevated. And so I'm basically just kind of always like flexing this inner thigh and outer thigh muscle. Mm-hmm. And that makes my leg tired, because even the next morning that also my thigh area was sore from all of that.
I'd just like to point out that Lars Ulrich is like almost 60 and still going at it.
Again,
so
he does this for a living.
But like, he has practice with those specific muscles like all the time, right? Plus, like the specific ways in which you tire yourself out doing Rock Band drums, like part of the reason it may be like attributable to like general stamina or youthful vigor or whatever. But part of it is also like, how often do you use those muscles intensely over a long period of time?
Yeah. I mentally was wondering though if I'd be able to keep up like I did back in the day, because Angie and Zach's cat back in the day, like I felt like I could adapt to some of the patterns and sequences much faster. But playing this, like, we played some Beatles Rock Band, and I don't really know the Beatles catalog, so it was sort of a challenge of learning like the rhythm and the sequence on the screen. But then for songs that I knew, I was like, this seems a little harder than I remember. Like, how come my brain is not quite keeping up? That was a little depressing.
Mm-hmm. Also something that would have come back to you, I'm sure.
We can only hope.
The first rhythm games I played, I didn't go back farther than either of you. But when I started with rhythm games, it wasn't the like Guitar Hero kind of like jukebox karaoke style games. It was the like older, shorter, almost music video sort of games. I think I'm pretty sure the first one I played was Parappa the Rapper.
That was a big deal back in the day when they came out.
Yeah, I remember that and Space Channel 5. And I think I also mentioned Guitar Oh Man. Like, I got really into rhythm games in like the late 90s and early 2000s. Aside from, I guess, Oh and Don and Elite Beat Agents fall into this category. But mostly I feel like we've been talking more about the more jukebox style music games. Do either of you have experience with any of the other, like, I guess more Parappa or Space Channel 5 style rhythm games?
No. The only other ones that I can't say I've really... Well, no. I mentioned it earlier really briefly, but in whatever arcade, may have been Reno, but I think it was something else. There was a Taiko drum. If it wasn't the Taiko Drum Master game, it was like something else, but it was a Taiko drum game. And I don't really know if that necessarily counts as like a jukebox style game, but that's the only one other than the ones that we've already discussed that I have some experience with. And then somebody brought in, when I worked at GameStop, person brought in just like this huge collection of, I think it was almost entirely PS2 stuff. And this was at the point where we had stopped taking, for sure we had stopped taking peripherals, and we had stopped taking most, if not all, PS2 games.
Mm-hmm.
And this person just had this whole collection, and they just left it. They're just like, well, I don't want this stuff. And so, of course, my manager got first dibs, and he got, like, the best stuff. But there was still some cool stuff left over, including a whole, like, Taiko Drum Master set. And
she gave that to me.
Yeah, I was going to say, I brought it home, and I gave it to Robert. But I never ended up playing it.
I think I still have not fired it up.
Yeah.
Really?
But
yeah.
I used to have like 2 Taiko drums, several of the Taiko Drum Master games.
Did you give me a set also recently?
I don't know how recent it would have been, but it's possible.
Huh. I'm going to go through my collection.
I know I don't have Taiko anymore, but I'm not sure where they went.
Well, I would be remiss if I didn't mention the fact that I was a big fan of the Rhythm Thief game on Nintendo 3DS. It was a mix of like kind of Phoenix Wright style gameplay with rhythm gameplay. That was pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, you cannot ignore Donkey Kong Jungle Beat. The great use of the bongos.
Definitely not a rhythm game, but like I had the bongos. I had Jungle Beat. I never bought Donkey Kong. That was another game where I looked at the track list. And I was like, I'm too good for that.
It was definitely more like 2000s hits, some top 40 stuff.
Yep.
It didn't resonate as much with me, the track list, but it was still fun.
It's kind of funny with Jungle Beat, how it kind of, it was almost a preview of like, you know, people will now do on Twitch or whatever, like so-and-so beats Dark Souls or Sekiro using only a Guitar Hero controller,
yes.
Like that kind of thing. And like, obviously it happened before, but Jungle Beat is almost designed around that premise. Like, can you beat a platformer with this ridiculous set of drums?
Yeah.
I think it's actually pretty cool how, if you think of like the guitar controllers and, you know, these different peripherals that came out, including the Wii Remote with this, I think, it really opened the door for disabled players to be able to kind of get in on the fun, because it was like, you know, a traditional controller can be just murderous for somebody who has, you know, different various disabilities. But like these peripherals, like the guitars and the Wii Remote and everything, I think kind of showed you that there's different ways of doing input. And that leads to like Microsoft's adaptive controller.
I see. So you're not saying it, because it sounded like you were saying something crazy at the start, but you're not saying like the Guitar Hero controller
pretty sure you'd be grappling with that,
but just like
the Wii Remote, definitely, you know, that was one where people who were like, you know, I have issues, but I can swing this remote. And I think that really, you know, that all kind of went hand in hand. It was such an experimental time.
The late 90s to late 2000s flowering of weird peripherals kind of like opening people's minds to new ways of controlling things. Yeah, I could buy that.
Yeah. In fact, the adaptive controller, that even has probably some roots with, there's software called Makey Makey, where you can make like a banana into a controller for a game. but yeah, anyway.
A very simple controller. It's like a one button controller.
Yeah, right? Basically. But yeah, in terms of other rhythm games, I'm trying to think of other stuff I've played. I don't think I ever played the Parappa game. Parappa.
That's how I always say it.
Yeah. Oh, what was that one game? Vib Ribbon?
Yeah, I had that one too. That one's pretty niche for anyone who doesn't know. That's a black and white original PlayStation game that has a few tracks built into the game itself, but the real selling point is you could load VibRibbon into your PlayStation, and it was such a small game that it could fit entirely in RAM. And then you would open your PlayStation, take out the VibRibbon disc, and put in a CD, and it could read those, play your music, and automatically create stages based on the music. So you would be playing along to whatever music you'd put in. Mm. It's pretty simplistic, the control scheme and the scoring and all that, but it's still a really cool one-of-a-kind experience at the time. I don't think I'd go back to play VibRibbon now just because the gameplay is pretty simple, mm-hmm. but really cool. It's actually by the same studio that made Parappa.
It's interesting, too, how games like the Yakuza series have implemented little mini-games, like rhythm mini-games.
Oh, like the karaoke.
You know, the karaoke. It's funny because part of it is that the games are stylized depending on which game you're playing, like Zero, for example. You know, I was almost going to call it a period piece, like it's a movie, but yeah, a period game.
I think you can call it a period piece.
Yeah. And so part of like the styling of the words across the screen, they have almost like a retro feel. But part of it too is just like, that's the feel that rhythm games have. They're kind of charming in that way that they almost have this, like I said, like a retro kind of old school feel. And so when I'm playing Yakuza 0, for example, and I'm doing the karaoke stuff, it makes me a little nostalgic because it makes me think of, you know, these games from the 2000s. Yeah.
Beat Saber is really good. I don't think either of you have played it.
Is that the VR one?
Yeah. So the Oculus has become popular for whatever reason, but whether it's Oculus or some other VR headset that you play with, that game is just incredible. Like, you're in the VR space and you're holding the two VR controllers, one in each hand. And in the VR world, they're manifested as lightsabers, basically. And you have these cubes coming at you and you have to slice them in a certain direction. That's part of the challenge, but you're slicing them as well to the rhythm of the music that's playing. And so there's different music tracks you can get and everything, but that game is just so engaging. Like, I think Guitar Hero and Rock Band are like my absolute favorites of like the rhythm genre, just because I love music and just the way those games play. But that is probably right up there for me, was Beat Saber. Because when I was in a grad program, we were making a VR game, at least in part. And so we were like, oh, we got to try some VR stuff. And so we put in Beat Saber. Man, we all were just sitting there playing it for hours. That game's really good.
I would definitely look. I know at some point I'm going to be trying VR games. I'm not in a rush to do it, but
get the Vive. I think that's Valve's.
Well, I know there are different options. I know Sony's got their own options also. And I think at least for the original PSVR, it can be used on a computer. Anyhow, regardless, Beat Saber is definitely on my list of things to check out.
Forgive me. It was the Valve Index.
Okay. All right. Yeah. So we got the Index, the Vive, the whatever.
Samsung Gear, I think.
Too many. But I think I would probably also put Rock Band on the top. I could see, like, if I got good enough at DDR, maybe that would be up there too. But like, there's a complexity to the guitar inputs, either on their own, like if you're playing on Expert, or alongside like singing along, like if you're doing vocals and guitar, because that adds another kind of complexity. Like in terms of high skill ceiling engagement in a rhythm game, I think that's probably the most entertaining that I've had. A lot of these are still like, I had a lot of fun with Oendon and Elite Beat Agents on some of the harder stuff, and Space Channel 5, honestly, I don't think is as up there mechanically, but I remember back when I played Space Channel 5 the first time, the way that the story climaxes with the last song is really, like, it's really easy to get caught up in the sweep of things. It feels like, you know, it doesn't like feel like you're at a concert or whatever, but it somehow manages to convey the kind of like big cathartic triumph.
Kind of like when you're Chris Redfield punching the boulder.
Yeah,
in Resident Evil 5. It makes sense in that moment.
I do still hope that at some point, whether, you know, maybe we get like a long shot maneuver from Microsoft now, or maybe Harmonix eventually finds some partner to work with for like a small batch of adapters or whatever. But I do hope that this stuff carries forward and people are still able to play Rock Band and stuff on newer consoles going forward.
I think a more recent rhythm game that's kind of cool, although I'm not good at it, although I'll admit I haven't like really tried to get good at it, is Crypt of the Necrodancer and then, you know, Cadence of Hyrule, same studio.
Yeah.
Those are pretty cool uses of, you know, rhythm and music and the, like, you know, that Zelda type of gameplay. I think they pulled that off pretty well. I mean, they pulled it off well enough that Nintendo was like, hey, go make a Zelda game. That must have been an amazing feeling for that studio. Mm-hmm. But those games are pretty cool.
You know, those actually remind me of Ultima 3 on the NES, which is not properly a rhythm game. It's a JRPG adaptation of a non-JRPG. It was like, I think it's like a, it's a weird NES adaptation of a PC game. But the combat in that game seems like it's random, but it's actually like frame timing based. So you're like stupid little RPG characters are like waggling back and forth in two frames of animation. And depending on the timing of your A button presses, you'll either hit or miss. So as soon as you realize that's what's going on, then every fight in that game becomes a rhythm game.
Well, that's like Mother 3 when you play that game. Yeah, battle sequence is all rhythm based. And like you can play it straight where you just do your attacks and don't pay attention to it. But if you figure out the rhythm, you can do massive damage when you're like tapping along to it, which is really cool.
I completely forgot about Rocksmith. I remember that was supposed to be a big deal when it came out.
Is that the, like one with the real guitar?
Yeah, yes. Like you had to actually learn how to play guitar to play
you
that one.
You plug in pretty much a USB cable or whatever into pretty much any electric guitar, and you would play using a real guitar. So, yeah, you either had to know already or you would teach yourself, I guess. But, yeah, that was a real flash in the pan. I remember we had a bunch on the store floor when I worked at GameStop, and those did not move.
Did they come with guitars?
I don't know if there was a version that potentially came with a guitar. I think there might have been, but I just remember just nobody. It was good. I think there was maybe like a little box set that just had like the cable and the game.
Well, didn't Rock Band 3 come with the keyboard? But like, wasn't it a little mini real keyboard? And I think there was like two songs in the entire set list that actually
utilized. Oh, no, there were a ton more than two songs.
I'm just joking.
And like that's something like people kind of lament about Rock Band 4 is it lost the
keyboard. Cheapskates.
Was, Robert, when you mentioned Guitar Hero on the DS, were you referencing Band Hero? Or were you referencing just Guitar Hero?
It was Guitar Hero on tour. And there was two other versions. And then there was Band Hero on the DS. Although I think Band Hero had a drum set that you connected to the DS, if I'm remembering correctly.
Yeah, I was trying to remember what all came with Band Hero. I just remember it was like a box that had stuff in it.
Yeah, I have all those, the handheld, the DS little rhythm games, I have all those.
I never got any of the portable, like Rock Band Guitar Hero stuff. It kind of seemed like it was missing the point or missing the appeal for me. Although I did have DJ Portable on the PSP.
DJ Hero.
I forgot about...
I remember when Guitar Hero was like kind of at its height, that there were people trying to act like it was, you know, I don't know, racist or exclusionary because it was nothing but like this rock music. And it's just like, well, I mean, it's kind of hard to do hip-hop with a guitar. Yeah. So, but then they came out with DJ Hero. Uh-huh. And it was like, then it was servicing all that other music that you couldn't really do with the guitar set. So.
DJ Hero also came out at a time when... the wannabe DJ was so huge.
Yeah,
I remember so many of my peers, you know, wanted to be DJs, and then these dudes were, you know, getting their hands on like vintage DJ equipment and receivers and speakers and stuff, and then they had wound up like jacking up the prices of those things at like thrift stores and stuff because dudes wanted them, and then DJ Hero came out, and I think we had a midnight launch. We had a lot of people show up and buy that whole set.
So DJ Hero, I don't clearly recall. Was there like a fake turntable as a controller?
Okay. Never got to play it.
That's cool.
Never played it either.
What was the portable one like?
Oh, DJ Portable. It's DJ Portable Max. Mm-hmm. Volume 1 peripheral? And 2. No, you just use the buttons. It was like,
you know,
left, down, right, square, X, circle. And it would just be like falling notes. And you would have to match them up. It was pretty tricky just because like, there's six, I think there were six buttons. Maybe they used the shoulder buttons too. I don't know. It was really frenetic.
I remember the portable Guitar Heroes.
And it was all K-pop or like Korean, because it was a Korean made game. So it was like all like K-pop or like Korean EDM or whatever.
But, you know, the portable Guitar Hero games, I just remember, like, they were fun, but you also, or at least I sat there thinking, I better touch everything carefully because I'm not breaking the hinge on my DS. Mm-hmm. Like, you had to be kind of restrained unless you just didn't give a crap.
The games that I had no interest in, and I think maybe my hatred is a little unwarranted. I don't know why I find these games so annoying. Just Dance. I just find Just Dance so annoying.
People and like, love those games too. Like,
I know.
Oh, man.
And like every single time, you know, E3 rolls around, you know, oh, they're going to announce, you know, Just Dance this
Just
year.
Just Dance 23. Yeah, surprise.
They're becoming as bad as the, what were those CDs called again in like the 2000s and 90s? Yeah, the Now Music.
Now 24.
Yeah, Now 35.
I feel like Just Dance is fun, but it's like it's strictly a party game. I can't imagine, unlike with like Guitar Hero or Rock Band, where I feel like you can like sit on the couch alone and just enjoy like the complexity mm-hmm. and vibe of playing the game. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine playing Just Dance alone at home.
Maybe for exercise.
For exercise, yeah. I wonder if...
I think there's like a self-consciousness barrier in Just Dance to get over.
It is interesting though, because they've made it now so that multiplayer, it's just an app you download onto a phone. Mm. You don't even need controllers.
I wonder if, and I don't know because I've never watched any gameplay or really know anything about it, but the Zumba games, I wonder if those technically fall into this category, because, you know, Zumba, the workouts, I at least believe are like dance oriented. But I just remember when... what was that called again? The Kinect. When the Kinect came out. And then the Zumba games came out. And oh my God, we had like... They were never like a crazy seller at the GameStop I was working at. But we had a fair amount of women that were coming in. You know, they would never have come in otherwise. But they were just like, oh, do you have the Zumba game? And then I'd be like, oh, which Zumba do you want? We have a couple different ones.
I kind of feel like if Zumba is a rhythm game, then like Billy Blank's Taibo is a rhythm game.
That involves rhythm.
I mean, there's rhythm boxing on the Switch now. Yeah. There's two of them. It's actually, you know, it is interesting because...
And we are really dating ourselves in this particular podcast.
Well, you know, I get why. I mean, like, take Guitar Hero, you know. Activision totally oversaturated the market and did what they always do. But it is just kind of odd how all this stuff has disappeared. I mean, like, look at Peloton or that stupid mirror thing mm-hmm. that you can get and work out in front of.
Yeah, which is like creepy.
Yes, but it's like clearly people are willing to buy physical objects, spend money on them because they're not cheap. Although I think they said Peloton has experienced like a 50% reduction.
They at least supposedly temporarily stopped production.
Yeah, people have stopped ordering their elaborate coat hangers.
Yeah. Yeah.
But regardless, it's like there are people still willing to do this. Like if you can get somebody willing to go buy the mirror, you can get somebody to go buy, you know, Zumba 2022 for whatever console. Mm-hmm. So it's just, I don't know, I feel like people would still gravitate to these things. They just aren't, you know, the industry has kind of abandoned it. Like, mm-hmm. the industry's fickle.
Yeah.
I mean, I get that money is money, but, like, I think the audience is there. Like, I talked to a lady recently who, again, the stupid Oculus, but she bought it, and this was an older woman. She said she was 58. She bought it for the metaverse, and she bought it for fitness. She said she was some kind of, like, athletic instructor. Mm. And I'm like, this woman spent at least $300, if not $400, to get the headset and to do some kind of fitness thing with it. It's like, bring back Wii Fit. You know, like, bring back the music games. Like, what are we doing here?
Yeah.
Rather do that than, you know, spend money on a stupid Peloton or whatever.
Yeah, you know, it's funny that you bring up Wii Fit, because Wii Fit had also incorporated some of the rhythm stuff. There was, like,
the stepping.
Yeah, the stepping. I guess it was maybe just the stepping. There was actually a dance mini game in there, too. But, yeah, I mean, the rhythm games do provide good exercise, so.
Any closing thoughts on the rhythm game genre?
No, other than just they need to bring back either Rock Band or Guitar Hero or both.
Agreed. I think there's a place for certain franchises that were just mismanaged, but could probably still come back and thrive. I mean, even though I hate to say it, you could probably figure out a way to do Guitar Hero where you don't even need a console. Like, you know, maybe it is through your phone or whatever, but regardless, like, I think you can bring those back if you do it right. It's just like Skylanders. It's like, that's a cool concept, and, like, even if you have your rotten little kid with a tablet, there's no reason they can't, like, oop, here's my toy that connects with the tablet. Like, yeah. People need to get off their... their butts and fix these things.
I don't know. I think it's hard to imagine Guitar Hero or Rock Band kind of roaring back to the way it was. I think there was kind of a mania around it. Like the Wii with touch controls is another example of, like, you know, touch controls can continue to be used going forward. Not touch controls, waggle, whatever. But I don't think it's going to be like it was. It's going to be more niche, even if it's carried forward. But I do hope it is carried forward, like other genres that have had their day in the sun and have had the sun kind of set on them, that can still turn out good work from time to time, like Zero Ranger for shmups, for example. Like, they're not coming out as often. Scene's not quite as bustling as it was from the 80s through like 2000 or so, but it's not gone, right? Mm-hmm. So that's all I'm hoping for, is that in some form it does carry on, even if it isn't a fixture of the arcade and it isn't a fixture of the living room, that it's still out there as part of the landscape.
I think that's a good way to end it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. So, bye. And stuff.
Thank you for joining us for our first episode of the second season.
Isn't that what I said?
Hey, it's a little different.
Oh, just okay. Think, we'll be like Marvel Comics now, where they have the legacy numbering. So it's season 2, episode 1, but at some point when we hit like episode 50, you know, like when you add them all together, we'll point out it's the 50th episode.
And then at some point we're going to go back to, you know, number 1 again.
Yeah, we're going
to
do a reboot.
Yeah, and then we're going to have some big summer special, you know, or something happens. One of us dies, but not really. Turns out he just wasn't on that episode.
It turns out Robert has been a clone for the last 10 episodes.
Oh, no.
Clone. I'm the Ben Reilly of the
podcast.
All right. Like I said, bye.
Bye.